Shalom and welcome again to another edition of Seekers of Meaning, the podcast of Jewish Sacred Aging. I am your host, Rabbi Richard Address. Now, these podcasts are presented to help explore the impact of the longevity revolution on our congregations and our community. We invite you to visit our website, www.jewishsacredaging.com, and the Jewish Sacred Aging Facebook page. And we invite your comments and suggestions to Rabbi Address at jewishsacredaging.com. Or you can leave a voicemail message for us on the website homepage. And without further ado, we welcome to today's podcast Dr. Mark Agronin, the author of an unbelievably wonderful book, very powerful and timely book, The End of Old Age. Doctor, welcome to Seekers of Meanings. How are you doing?
Thank you so much, Rabbi. It's really a pleasure and an honor to be here.
Well, thank you very much. You're in Miami, so the sun is shining and all is good with the world, I hope.
It's a beautiful day and wonderful, a wonderful day to talk about aging.
Every day is, I hope. The End of Old Age is your book. It's available in bookstores, I guess, on the great God Amazon. And what was the motivation? You're a adult and geriatric psychiatrist. So this is the ballpark you play in. What pushed you to write this book?
So I work as a geriatric psychiatrist in Miami. I've been at an amazing institution called Miami Jewish Health for the past 20 years, essentially working with the residents here and every level of care to help with mental health issues. I run a memory and research center. And so I work every day with individuals with Alzheimer's disease and other different forms of neurocognitive disorders and all the issues that they have to face. You would think on one hand, given what I do and the fact that I work with some of the oldest individuals in our community with lots of different challenges, that I would have a relatively negative or at least a very sobering take on aging. But I've seen over time that you can't look at the challenges or deficits without also looking at the strengths and the amazing things that we gain as we get older. And so I found year after year, as I was writing a lot of professional papers and textbooks and chapters about all the different problems that we face when we get older, I also was seeing, but in my own practice, the strengths and the advantages we gain, but not enough written about it. And I decided that I wanted to write a book that put that front and center, that made the argument on page one that we have to stop looking at aging as a problem and look at it as what I see as a solution. And I argue this point because it brings us wisdom and creativity and purpose in ways that we're simply not able to gain when we're younger. Those are unique strengths. They need to be highlighted. And when we recognize them, when we leverage them, we not only live longer, we live better.
It's interesting you say, because I know you write in the book, I think it's on page seven, that just what you just said, aging is the solution and not the problem. And in the work that we do here in Jewish Sacred Aging with congregations and groups and synagogues and community centers and JCCs around North America, this much more positive approach, in many cases, the first word that comes to my mind, joy of saying, this is an amazing time of my life. And even dealing with certain types of losses and changes in body, mind, etc., this can be a very, very exciting time of life. You write about in the major point, major aspect of the end of old age, about what you call age points. Could you talk to me about what you mean by age points?
Well, you were just talking about the process of aging and emphasizing the fact that there's a completeness to what we experience. We experience loss, we experience gain, we experience grieving and joy. All these things are part of life, regardless of how old you are. We tend to think about development, growth in terms of children and adolescents and young people. Young people face developmental milestones that help them grow. We have experiences when we're young that teach us. We don't stop growing like that. We always have experiences that give us the opportunity to make changes that can better not only our lives, but those for our family and our community. I wanted to focus on those points. This is what people bring to me in my office. Often these are crises. Typically, they're very bad things that happen, but not always. I call these age points because they're developmental milestones in our adult lives. It can be a crisis, it can be a loss, it can be a major life change or transition. But what happens during what I call an age point is that we suddenly find ourselves in a situation in which all of our capabilities, our resources, our beliefs are not able to fully apprehend and cope with the situation. For a lot of people, this is a crisis. It can be a crisis of faith, a crisis of capability, a crisis of finances. But it gives us the opportunity amidst the stress and the strife to grow, to change, to reexamine ourselves, to get out of the paralysis that we typically face and to find a resolution that makes us better people and makes us better families and communities. I wanted to focus on those because the typical view of aging is that these age points are disastrous, that this is what makes aging so difficult and so bad. And there's so much a focus on how to die better or die easily when we hit points like this, especially in the very ends of life. I want to make the opposite point that these are some of the most important and creative times in our lives, even though they're some of the most challenging, because they're really what enable us to grow in wisdom and to apply our purpose and really understand what our purpose in life is, to summon our creativity and to make all the difference. And this is what I call an age point, and I think the examination of it in our own lives can really make all the difference.
It's fascinating because in reading the book and making my notes in the back of the book, one of the things we in teaching this from a Jewish textual point of view, which is what we do in Jewish sacred aging, these are from Genesis 12. These are Lech Lecha moments. These are moments of transition, great transition in a person's life, where really the choice of how to move forward or not to move forward takes place. And so it was fascinating to read some of the parallels in what we teach from the text, from the Jewish textual point of view, and what you're and what you're writing from your medical geriatric psychiatric point of view. Could you, in your discussing of the age points, you say the age points fall into four distinct stages: event, suspension, reckoning, and resolution. Could you like real fast walk us through what you mean by those? What these stages really mean?
Sure. And I actually think talking about the Torah or the Bible is so important because almost all of the great figures were quite elderly when they had so many huge events in their lives. I mean, Abraham was not a young man when God told him to, leave his home and go with his family and take himself to a different place. Similarly, most of the major events we face often are when we are older. It begins with an event, something that throws us off our game, something that challenges us. It may be something minor, it may be something catastrophic. Our initial reaction to it often is one of uncertainty, sometimes paralysis. I call this the suspension, when we don't know really what to do initially. We don't know which direction to take. Some of our values, some of our decision making may not be working, or we're uncertain about whether it will work. Some people get stuck at that point. This is often individuals who retreat into substance use and abuse. People get paralyzed. They have panic. They get depressed. They have panic attacks. They have a hard time moving beyond that. Sometimes people even get suicidal. The key is to be able to get into the next phase, which I call reckoning, where we really begin to re-examine the situation, to re-examine ourselves, our values, our thoughts, our decisions. And this is really where we have to consider what is our true purpose? What are our true values? How do we apply them now? And are there certain things that we need to adapt and to change in some ways to accommodate the situation? over time, we really reestablish ourselves. We bridge that gap between what we are not able to do or we don't think we're able to do to being capable of that. And I call this a resolution. We emerge in many respects as a new person. And so those phases everyone goes through, it's possible to get stuck. Someone who is stuck in the reckoning period becomes so indecisive that they really don't make a decision. They can't make a decision. But I think the more we realize this process and we realize that there is always a way forward, it gets us to that resolution, which can make all the difference.
You're right in the book, and we're speaking with Dr. Mark Agronin, adult and geriatric psychiatrist, the Miami Jewish Health, about his very powerful and important book, The End of Old Age, available, I guess, at Barnes & Noble, bookstores everywhere, and Amazon. And Doctor, you write in the middle of the book of this concept that you call geropause, which I think I'm pronouncing correctly. What do you mean? What is geropause? It's an interesting concept.
Well, I tried in the book when there were aspects of aging that didn't have a term to at least coin a term for the sake of the book. I made a comparison to the major life transition that women go through with menopause, when something both biological and an aspect of their psychological identity shifts over time. And how it's important for someone to be able to really redefine themselves. Men don't go through as similar a dramatic change in terms of hormones, but certainly things do shift over time. There's a notion of an andropause. So for me, I cast this in aging that as we get older and make major transitions in life, due to aging, maybe it's changes in how we think, changes in memory or physical capability or how we appear. Some people find themselves really struggling and stuck in that. And this I call a geropause, a point in which we're really suspended between who we were when we were younger and who we will be when we get older. And it's a form of an age point. It's a period of time in which there is the potential for difficulty and stagnation, but there's also the potential for incredible growth and change. And we have a great deal of ability to decide which direction we want to head in, but we have to see that ability. We have to have a positive, hopeful attitude. This is the crux of aging for so many people. They do not see a clear vision or future of what aging will be. They only have a negative view of it. And so they truly get stuck in certain situations. And I'm going to give you a good example of this. I can't tell you how many times I've heard the following, working with either a patient or friends tell me anecdotally, or when I speak, someone who is in their 80s and 90s, and they have to move into a senior community of some sort. And they say, I don't want to be there with all those old people. And people look at this and they find this humorous and, you know, isn't that great? They have a youthful spirit. They don't like being around all these old people. To me, I look at that as someone who cannot or has difficulty facing the not only the fact of aging, but also what it could be. They have such a negative view of aging that they're not just putting down their peers. They're really putting down themselves and their own aging self instead of understanding and embracing the fact that this is the reality of all of our lives. But what it will be is what we make of it or what others help us make of it. It can be difficult on your own to do that. But if we start off with looking at aging as a disease, as a negative, as only a time of decline and decrepitude, when you hit that point, you do get stuck. And this is why there's so much, and I would argue too much focus on, you know, how to end our lives in graceful ways, how to smooth the dying process when we're forgetting that, you know, how many years of living we're doing before we get to that point. That's where the focus needs to be placed.
Yeah, you have a sense, because I pick this up a lot, of the challenge of letting go to various stages of life as we get a little older. I mean, you kind of allude to it in the book of holding on. But I found that the people who can let go of certain things or past or regrets or even a stage of life and move on in a positive way. I mean, this letting go and not seeing it as all the time just a negative thing, because you allude to this, the negative aspect of how we see this last third of our life. But in your work, does this difficulty in letting go come up a lot?
It does come up because the context is different. When you're younger, let's say you're going from high school to college, you know, people struggle with letting go of living at home with your parents, letting go of what you were like or did in high school versus college is an example. But most people make that transition relatively smoothly, not always. But I think in part because there's so much to look forward to. You can project many, many years and opportunities and exciting things in the near future. Whereas when people think about some of these later life transitions, it's more truncated. They don't envision the years or the opportunities or possibilities. And so it's more difficult for them to really be positive about that. And so for me, part of the book is trying to help people during that to paint a better picture of these transitions and have people be more hopeful and ultimately more excited about it, realizing that they have so much to give others and to give themselves, that when they realize that, it can be really rejuvenating for so many people. In the very least, it gives people to think about what their legacy will be and what do they want to leave for others. And this is an incredibly motivating and purposeful aspect of our lives. No one wants to feel hopeless about it. So it's a matter of thinking about what are the possibilities. And I speak a lot in the book about individuals who are very limited. Let's say someone has Alzheimer's disease or a severe physical condition that they truly do have very significant limitations. Well, then it's up to the people around them to help engage that, to bring it out, to give them those opportunities. And that's why, to me, I'm not just speaking about this view of aging to older people. I want to speak to young people as well, because we're surrounded with the opportunities to help older people to recast the way we think about aging, and it makes all the difference in our own lives.
Yeah, the multi-generational thing, I think the society has yet to capture that. The fact that this really is a family systems issue, and it is a multi-generational issue. We're seeing that all over the place. But I want to, you know, you touch on, well, I just want to also ask you this, because I'm seeing this in the work we do in Jewish Sacred Aging. I had a professor at the seminary who taught us this concept of finite factuality. And I'm interested in your work and your writings and your speaking and your day-to-day understanding of this stage of life. Is if somebody is successful in internalizing their own mortality, understanding that each one of us will die, is that a key to aging successfully?
Well, I think it's an important component of it to see ourselves within the whole life cycle. I think most people do come to an acceptance of their mortality, of dying. It's extraordinarily rare for me. And remember, the average age I work with is close to 90. Wow. It's extraordinarily rare for me to hear someone tell me that they're afraid of death or dying. I typically hear the opposite. Or people just accept it as a part of life. I think when you're younger, it's hard to even imagine that. Mm-hmm. There's such a pervasive fear of death, which is, you know, understandable, of course. I don't see that. I see that transformed in people in their 80s and 90s. And this, I think, has a lot to do with two different phenomena. One is the fact that we do find that older people tend to be more positive, to gravitate towards more positive images and experiences, something that is called socio-emotional selectivity, based on the work of the Stanford psychologist Laura Carstensen. And also we find, if you look at overall ratings of well-being, that we tend to see increases later in life. In most surveys, older people are the happiest, most satisfied individuals, contrary to what we believe. In fact, rates of depression in normal aged individuals actually go down with age, not up as we imagine. So it really is reflective in part of the fact that people are more accepting of death, of their ending, and they also begin to do a different form of a mental calculation. If you know that the horizon is much closer, your choices are going to be based ideally on what's most meaningful to you, what's most practical, what's most achievable, because that's the reality of the situation. But I think this gives people a very deep sense of purpose and satisfaction.
Well, I guess that then leads to the next obvious to me. So, question of in your experience in working with people, and especially at the age group that you're working with, do you find that the role of a person's spirituality plays an increasingly important role in their life and in their view of as they move towards the end of their life?
I find individuals who were more religious earlier in life tend to be able to really lean on that and develop that later in life. Individuals who really didn't have a connection, or they rejected it, or are very cynical about it, they it's more difficult for them to rely on that. But when they do find it, it's very deep. And I think this speaks to some of the research that's been done, finding that individuals who are regular churchgoers, more regularly involved in some religious community, tend to live longer and in some ways tend to do better. And I think it's tapped into that. But I have to say, I equally see individuals who in some ways reject it as they get older, and they cut themselves off from their religious beliefs or religious communities. And I think that's a struggle. I see often in lots of families, I'll give you an example. I see often with Jewish families today that the whole process of sitting Shiva, the whole ritual around death, often is, you know, not practiced in the same way. People will do a day or two. And I think it's unfortunate, not just for the spirit of the person who's passed on, but also for the family.
Right.
Because the whole process, the whole ritual is so beautifully designed to help people get through that grief, to honor the soul of the person. And it sends a message to us and to young people and to one another about the value and sacredness of life. When you bury someone today and maybe you sit Shiva for a day or two and then, well, let's move on. I think it begins to unravel that sacredness and those connections.
It's interesting.
That concerns me.
No, it's interesting you mention that, because in the last couple of months, in several conversations with colleagues, as I've traveled, this subject has come up a lot. And the idea that we've seen a retreat especially in the liberal Jewish community, the non-Orthodox communities, of the Shiva observance, it's truncated, it's massaged for convenience. And it's interesting that you hear that from your perspective, from the medical psychiatric point of view, that you also see this ritual as extremely important to the grief process psychologically as well as spiritually and emotionally.
I agree. I think all of these rituals are so important. I'll give an example of something different from the dying process, but I do. If I'm meeting with a patient who I know is religiously observant, I especially when in a really difficult situation, you know, my role is as a doctor, but sometimes I'll bring them into my office and I have a very beautiful tzedakah box, you know, the box for putting charity, and what my grandmother called a pushki growing up.
Right.
And to me, growing up, the ritual was when something was good, you put something in it, you know, a few coins. When something you were worried about, you put something in. When you wanted something to work out, you put a few coins in. It just was a ritual. And I bring people in my office and I'll put in a little bit for them, and I'll say, we want all the help we can get here, and we want healing. And sometimes it goes above and beyond what you or I can do, but at least, you know, we So we're going to bring in all this, all the energy possible. And I find a lot of people, not only do they appreciate that, but it's a very powerful message about hope and about perseverance. To me, that's what aging has to be about, because it is tough at times. There's no question about it. Look, no one can argue that to me. I see the most difficult situation, people who not only are physically, medically, neurologically devastated, but add into that the psychiatric issues and social and financial issues. So, you know, people come in pretty desperate straits, but it doesn't mean that there aren't things we can't do about it.
How important are social relationships as we get older?
They're life-saving. They make all the difference. And as people lose peers, as they lose spouses, siblings, and whatnot, that's, for many people, one of the most challenging issues, because the world in which they're surrounded is slowly disintegrating in certain respects. You know, those most important connections. Think about in I think there's a psalm where it talks about, you know, being orphaned at a certain point. Everyone eventually, you lose your parents, you become orphaned. And it's just the very word, the very thought of it is so painful and so difficult to think about. And this is why it's so important that we find ways not only to help people make new connections and relationships, but have a sense and part of a community, but also that they have that closest connection with younger generations. It can't be today where the grandparents are sitting on the couch, completely disassociated from the younger people sitting on their phones or playing video games. This issue is becoming more and more of a gulf between different generations, and it's a big issue. And I think it shakes the confidence of older people, because they think, even with all my wisdom, if I can't help, you know, my child or my grandchild, you know, install or run this new app, somehow I'm useless. And, you know, that's a downside of what technology has done. When they, you know, the aging has given them the true repository of knowledge and wisdom and ability, that should never be ignored. So, you know, those connections, those relationships that you cite are so important, but we have so much work to do in that area.
Well, one of the things, and we've posted in the last couple of months on the website and the Facebook page of Jewish Sacred Aging, a series of articles that deal with this explosion, from what I've seen, and I like your comment, this explosion of isolation, social isolation, partly because we're living longer and some people do outlive their spouses and siblings. True. And sometimes their children. But the fact that there's too many people in our community who are basically left alone, and what does that do to a person's psyche and medical outlook, how much the more so their spiritual outlook, that they're totally isolated, that no one visits, they're in touch with no one. Are you seeing this?
Well, in the newer models of care really segregate older people into
right.
separate communities, separate buildings, separate places. And people are not as connected with their synagogues and churches as much, where there's often older people. This is a huge challenge, and I think very concerning, which is all the more reason why, to me, I'm so intent in talking about aging as a value, is something that we need to embrace, because it's not just embracing aging, it's embracing our own aging selves and aging people. It's so important.
In the work that you do, as you said, you deal a lot with issues of dementia and Alzheimer's. And before we start running out of time, one of the things I have to ask you about, because you're on the front lines of this, is we keep hearing reports from Alzheimer's Association and other people who work in this field, healthcare professionals, that as we move forward and the boomers age out, et cetera, they're just not enough trained geriatricians, geriatric specialists, caregivers to take care of us. First of all, in your opinion, are you seeing that? And two, how do we begin to deal with that if that is true?
Well, I saw this 20 years ago when I first came to work here. And it was bad then. It's only worse now. The Institute of Medicine did a whole report of a number of years back on the geriatric workforce, meaning the workforce of physicians in particular, working with older individuals, geriatricians, geriatric psychiatrists. this is going back maybe at least 6 to 8 years, they found that there with half the number that was needed existed. I'm sure the problem is even worse now. We just don't have enough people going to the field. There's many different reasons for that, but it's a crisis. People come to me. I would liken it to if you were a doctor who treated diabetes, mm-hmm. and people came to you already having, you know, horrible, physical problems from neglect for years, and you'd be shocked and think, why didn't we take care of this year? We have the ability to help and to improve things years ago. Why wait so long? I see that now. People come to me and I'm just astounded at how little they know about the condition, how little has been done, how little workup has been done. There's been no referrals. People, smart, brilliant people, struggling with caring for a parent, in part because they haven't brought them to someone who knows the territory, who knows what to do. I see situations all the time where people, have just struggled because they just don't know what they're dealing with. It's something I see every day. And so within a very short period of time, I can give them the lay of the land and help them, work to plot a solution. So it's a crisis, but it often comes down to the fact that if you look at our healthcare system now, if you don't have funding incentives for people to go into geriatrics, given the fact it's a field compared to other areas that it can be difficult financially, compared to other fields, I think, that's driven to some extent the fact that we don't have enough people in the field, and it's only going to get worse.
So we've been speaking with Dr. Mark Agronin, adult and geriatric psychiatrist based in Miami Jewish Health, on his book, The End of Old Age, again, available at bookstores and on Amazon. Dr. Agronin, if somebody wanted to contact you, follow up, perhaps ask you to come and speak, how do they do that? What's the contact information that you're able to give out?
I have a website, which is www.markagronin.com, which is MarkAgronin. And there's a tab on it where they can reach out to me. So that's the best way. Or they can always just reach me at Miami Jewish Health. I run our Memory and Research Center. And our hotline number here is 305-514-8710. It's actually our hotline for research, but it's probably the quickest, easiest way to get a hold of me.
So it's 305-514-8710, correct, for the hotline?
Exactly. Or they just call Miami Jewish Health and they ask for me, they'll be able to direct them.
So Dr. Agronin, thank you very much. This has been really great and a lot of interesting things and exciting things with the book. And I wish you continued success and good luck with the book and your speaking and, of course, your work and Todah Rabah. And, thank you.
Well, Rabbi, I wanted to thank you so much. This is such an important work doing, and I'm really honored that you would choose to highlight this. And thank you and wish you the ongoing success with this work.
Thank you. And thank all of you for listening to today's edition of Seekers of Meaning, the podcast of Jewish Sacred Aging. Again, we welcome your comments to rabbiaddress@jewishsacredaging.com and invite you to visit our Jewish Sacred Aging Facebook page. These podcasts are recorded at the studios of Lubeckan Global Media here in beautiful Cherry Hill, New Jersey, and produced by Mr. Steve Lubeckan. I am your host, Rabbi Richard Address. Thank you for listening, and shalom.